Welcome to Urban Tales, a podcast that delves into the minds of young entrepreneurs that have moved to New York City in search of professional development, and maybe even some personal development along the way. I'm your host, Maya Sargent, and today I am joined by Petrushka Bazin-Larsen and Nick Larsen, co-founders of Sugar Hill Creamery. Sugar Hill Creamery began in 2017 and has grown exponentially since its opening, recognized for its artistic take on food. With roots in Harlem, they now ship nationwide and have three locations across the city. Sugar Hill Creamery's flavors are inspired by Caribbean and Midwestern cultures, and their menu continues to push the boundaries for artisan desserts. Featured in a variety of media outlets as one of the greatest ice cream stores in the city, they are only continuing to grow. Today, Petrushka, Nick, and I will delve into the creation of Sugar Hill Creamery and how the backdrop of New York City and its communities have inspired their journey and development of their expansive business. Petrushka and Nick, welcome to Urban Tales. Thank you so much for joining me today. Why don't we start with how you got into this space and how your individual backgrounds led you to starting your own food business together as a couple?
Oh, sure. I'm Petrushka. I'm joined here with my husband, my life partner, my business partner, my roommate, my all things, Nick. In 2016, Nick was the GM of a fantastic restaurant uptown and on the Upper West Side. And shortly after taking that job, the restaurant closed. It just was unexpected. And so then we were offered a moment in our lives to envision what the next chapter would look like. And when we first started dating, we met in a restaurant. I'm not a great waitress. That's the end of that story. He expressed that he'd always wanted to open a food establishment of some sort uptown. And so naturally, food businesses can be risky investments, and they're obviously very laborious to manage and to do well. And so the question was always, what kind of concept, and also how will we do that? Because they're expensive, you know, to build out. Did not have the answers at that time, but then when prompted with this invitation to rethink life in 2016, that thought paired with some delightful ice cream that we had in a food hall in DC, we just kind of connected the dots, like, oh, we can't do this at home. So why don't we make the food thing the ice cream thing? It was basically like, let's bring something to the market, and by the market, our neighborhood, that doesn't exist already, so that we know at least we're like niching down, and we know like we're filling a culinary gap as opposed to presenting a redundant concept. And it's crazy because people are like, there's no ice cream uptown. It's like there was only large chain ice cream. So that's how we did it.
So you mentioned that Sugar Hill Creamery was a dream based on how you could bring a new creation to your city that wasn't a chain restaurant. I'm curious, building upon this, how would you describe your brand?
I think, I actually coach women who are mothers who are making career transitions similar to what I did. And something that came up in a session the other day with somebody is, especially if it's your first business and you're not just like investing in businesses, right? The way to distinguish your brand is by showing up in it, to have your core values reflected in the business. And so I think that even though there are three Sugar Hill Creameries in the city, then what distinguishes us from a larger brand? And I think it's that we're still very present and that we are building a company culture that reflects our values, and that can continue as a company grows. And eventually, perhaps, there'll be a lot more Sugar Hill Creameries. Who knows, right? We're trying to figure out what our next steps are. And if that does happen, does that quality, does that essence and that sort of family connection and all the like good, yummy things that people gravitate to when they are looking to patronize businesses that also reflect their core values, will it get lost, right? And the hope is that it won't. But for Harlem, the large ice cream, like who knows who owns those? Do you know, there's no culture connection or anything other than here's the product.
I feel like making this career shift as adults is often such a difficult decision to make. How did you find navigating that experience whilst having young children as well?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because we were just looking at a folder of images from October 21st. In this space, while we were finalizing the build out. And October 21st, 2020 was very much COVID. And we had at that time 3 children and we were doing remote learning. We podded with a family so that they could have some like social interaction and go to school together. And it was just really a lot. That's the answer. But the transition actually was, I think it was a needed transition because it allowed us to just have more together time, especially in New York. If you're working and you're working to earn so that you can provide, you can lose touch with that together time. In my mind, there's a whole curve on like your salary versus how much together time you can have. So we made a decision to reclaim our time so that we could have more together time. But obviously in so doing, you have to deal with other things. You know, we have to like build out a store that was previously a barbershop that had not been occupied for a really long time while pandemic is happening, while children need to be seen, they need to be educated and fed. And who's doing that? While we're also trying to figure out why the contractor is not doing their job and potentially stole our money, you know, stuff like that. I would never want to paint a picture that's like easy, but I think everything is hard and that as adults, we're faced with hard stuff and you have to just decide what hard you want. And is that hard worth your psyche being sad? Even through the hardness, we're still happy. We're still grateful. We're still content. We're still harnessing like our time.
Does that make it easier when you're doing it with your partner?
That's the million dollar question. Is it easier? Nick, would you like to reflect on that?
It's not easier or harder. I don't think it's just, you know, it just is what it is. Instead of it being a business relationship, is also a loving relationship, an intimate relationship. And I don't think it's, you know, it's abnormal either. I think it's like many, many, many food businesses, many small businesses are family owned. Our kids are in the back doing their homework. Everyone in the family is contributing.
And so you touched on the fact that you now have 3 locations in the city, but you first opened in Harlem. What do you think the impact of having roots in Harlem has had on your business? And how does that compare against the backdrop of New York City as a whole, do you think?
Well, Harlem is like it's like a little own city within the city. It has a lot of its own history. It has its own culture. It has its own sense of identity. And so like for us, it's like we've always, you know, since I lived here in 2004, I've been uptown and mostly in Harlem. And then Patricia has also been in Harlem since she was like 20. So we understand this neighborhood. We understand like, you know, what's involved. And we also care deeply about it. And I think it's, you know, it shows in our business and who we hire, who we work with, who we can collaborate with. It's very, there's a lot of intent in that. And like we do think about it and we do talk about it. And so Harlem is very important. It will always be part of our brand. It will always be our home.
As you're expanding and thinking about these new locations or the locations that you have, how do you stay true to your brand identity? How do you stay true to your roots?
It's about knowing who you are. Like understanding what your core values are and making decisions from that filter. That is it. So we have like company values, right? But then also Nick has an approach in making ice cream that he is not going to compromise. This is the truth, right? So an example might be a collaboration. Like we collectively believe in real ingredients, real food, like letting flavors come through ice cream and not over sugaring the ice cream so that you can't taste what's happening in it, right? Because a lot of thought was put forward in the flavor pairings. And then we're in New York and we also live in the age of the Black Mirror, if you will, like Instagram and, you know, all the social media accounts that you do that are free to use to promote your business. And we do actively use them. But because of the existence of those spaces, sometimes will be invited to do a collaboration with another brand to like make something crazy, right? So that you get the attention and then people come and learn about your brand. In the last 5 years, we've done a lot of fun collaborations that we feel are thoughtful and in line with our core values as a business and as individuals. But there have also been invitations to do things that are just for attention. And that's where we draw the line. So I use that example as like, it would be very easy to do a crazy thing for the attention, right? As you grow your brand. I don't know. We're just always checking in with each other. Does it feel right and in alignment with how we see the world? How do you not compromise that is like constantly having that self-reflective and sort of company reflective process.
So I'm really interested to know, where does the inspiration for your flavors come from? Are they just as rooted in community as well?
It comes from Nick's brain.
I try to think of it as like, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. Oh, this will work with this. And this works with this. Okay, so this should work out kind of thing. A lot of it came from, I never like worked the line, but I was always in the kitchen. I worked very, very good restaurants for almost a decade. You sit there and you see every menu combination that comes out the line. I saw this works with this, this works with that. Okay, let me see if it works with ice cream, right? The only thing is that you're doing is you're adding dairy into the equation. So that's kind of like how I start. I'm trying to think of an example. Like, I used to do this flavor. It was a ginger ice cream. I was like, okay, so ginger and chocolate works well, right? Pretzels and chocolate covered pretzels. Okay, that works together. And then peanut and chocolate works well. So I put these together and create a combination. Okay, so I have peanut, you know, chocolate covered pretzels, peanut brittle with the ginger ice cream. Then where's the name come from? Well, then it's like, these are like things that you get on an airplane, right? You get ginger ale with peanuts and the pretzels, right? So I was like, all right, we'll call it jet lag. And then it's also kind of an homage to a Harlem-based rapper, A$AP Ferg. So it's like, there's all these levels to it, and it's intentional.
Okay, so let me tell you a fun story. So when we started in 2017, so we had the idea in 2016, took us 10 months. We opened with like a month left in the summer of 2017. And Nick's experience in the hospitality space in New York has been front of house. So he's been service director, maitre d', general manager, captain, et cetera. But he's never worked on the line in the kitchen. So when we started, we actually had a pastry consultant. I was also working full-time elsewhere. And we'll have the pastry consultant come in and do all of the flavor development. And then winter hit. And at that time, it was like our first year in the winter when people don't know us as a company and also do not associate eating ice cream in the winter. So sales were down and we didn't have the data to know like what the sales trends were going to be, right? So we also had to be really, circumspect about what were the outflows of the business. And we did a little thought exercise. What are the flavors that you've made that are selling? And what are the flavors that our consultant has made that are selling? What are the ideas that you have, you know, for new flavors? And it really kind of worked out like that the flavors that Nick made were doing really well. So then there was data there to say, okay, so we need to lean into that. And unfortunately, we have to let the consultant go because we don't have the money to sustain the role. And we do have a skill set here that's not being fully tapped. So after that decision, that's when he started making all of the ice cream and has been making all of the ice cream ever since. And it's an interesting example of like trusting yourself, but also being bold to step into a role that somebody else didn't dignify you with, but that kind of create your own space. And we were just having this conversation the other day because he's like, I'm not a pastry chef, even though people call him chef, even our team, like they say chef. He's like, I'm not a chef because I did not work on the line. I did not earn that title in the way that is traditional and conventional for the space. But you are actually actively creating all these flavors and people are coming and we have a viable business. It's getting an honorary degree. And he is an honorary chef. And I think there's power in that. You'd make your own way.
And as co-founders, you were saying it's important to like trust yourself and believe in yourself. Do you think as you've grown as a brand, you've grown as individuals as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yes. I don't think that we are at all the same people. We're definitely upgraded versions of ourselves as a result of this little exercise that we've been doing for the last 5 years.
We'll be right back.
Speaking as obviously food business owners in a market that's reportedly worth over $900 billion, how do you manage expectations for a small business and for an upcoming business in New York City when you're in such close proximity with other businesses, other spaces? How do you kind of manage keeping goals realistic?
Okay. There's really only a few inputs that make a successful business. You have to have a great product, and then a lot of people need to know about it. And hopefully the people that do know about it will then tell other people, right? And then obviously referral is your best marketing tool. And then you have to make sure that your cost of goods are lower than what's coming in. Over the last 5 years, we know the trends of our sales and we've learned better how to manage all of the outputs of the business. But in terms of growing, we've been having this conversation since the summer. What is our next chapter? We've made it to the 5-year mark. Where do we want to go? Who are we as a business now? Because we've evolved as people. We've evolved as a brand. We definitely opened for our community, for Harlem. We live here. This is a response to something that's not here. But now that we have a few locations, it's like, well, do we just stay here and that's it? How do we share this experience and product with people that might not visit or come here? And is that important? And so I can't really give you an answer right now because we're trying to figure out what's important and how we want to grow and making sure that it is in alignment with our personal goals. Of course, we've been approached like, hey, we want to give you money to grow this thing. But like, I think through the last 5 years, it's like money is not everything. It's a tool, but it's definitely not going to make you happy. And it's not the salve or balm to like all your problems, right? Because how many companies do we know that took a lot of money and now founders are like hustling to like make sure that the numbers are making sense because they have the pressure of all of the new inflow of money. That's not why we started this. And so we're just trying to think about this in a very holistic perspective, that it's not going to then push us so far out of the lifestyle that we need at this time. But in terms of other managing other expectations around growth, we try to create as many feedback loops as possible between us and our customers. So we're very active in our social accounts. Like, you leave a comment, we're going to comment back. You know, it's not just like churning out content for the sake of presence, but like, what is that connection? And then in store, pre-COVID, we used to have free and fee-based programs so that people could sit and enjoy the ice cream if they wanted or not, but also connect over other things. And we're sort of slowly picking that back up. And then, you know, we have like a little thing at the register, tell us about your experience, which I'm learning from reading all of those like reviews that people are leaving, is that everybody that leaves those are actually fans. There's not like the Yelp trolley review in those things. That's interesting, right? And that's good information to have.
And do you think that's testament to the fact that it is so rooted in community and you started it for your community?
I think so. And then that concept is like, okay, this they do. Will people hate us if we grow? That's a real question, you know? Like, do we lose who we are if we grow? How can we have the same connections? How can the stores have the same connections in neighborhoods that are not our neighborhood where we have lived for now a long time?
Speaking about honoring your community, you mentioned that you run a new mums group. How important was it for you and your business to find creative ways to engage with your community?
Yeah, so to just clarify, because I think sometimes when we post about it on our account, people are like, that's awesome, I wish I had that. And they also think that it's free. That's one of our fee-based programs, but we have also free programs. The going rate for new moms groups in the city is like more than what we offer, because it's not our primary business. But I do believe that we value things that we pay for. And having come from a nonprofit background, like, I've seen that over and over again. When something is free, people just are not as committed. So that is the reason why I keep it that way. It has been running since March of 2018, and we have received engaged, facilitated reflection space for over 100 mothers. So it's not like a big number in my mind, over given like the number of mothers that are living in all of Harlem, but it is an amazing number because of the number of connections that have happened as a result of the space. It can create like a local ecosystem of information and actual material exchange, which I think especially in a like high consumer culture is super important. The New Moms Group has been a space for reflection for mothers who have just embarked on this period of their life. And we have a variety of topics that we touch on that are evergreen and applicable to any mother at any point in their motherhood journey.
So we've spoken about all these roles that you have, you know, parents, co-founders. How do you manage work-life balance? I feel like work-life balance, we talk about so much in this day and age. How do you manage it?
Well, I have some very strong opinions and definitions around it, and I'm going to let Nick respond, and then I will offer a response, because I think it's very important to see the spectrum.
For me, I grew up like on a farm, and farming was like all-encompassing. So it's very difficult for us, for me particularly, to separate the business from the life balance. It all revolves around this business because, like, you know, we put so much of our self in it, you know, whether it was our apartment, you know, we put it as collateral, all these things that like that we could lose if we lost the business. It's very high focal point. But now that we've kind of over that hump, so now let's see how we can enjoy it. Because my wife will say, well, if you take some time leisurely, you'll be more creative. And I don't know if I believe that, but she definitely does. But I'm working on it to not do that as much.
Okay. What is balance? Balance is a constant course correction, constant juggling. And I think when people ask, what about work-life balance? What they're asking is, how can I get my whatever is holding my off balance 90% to meet wherever the 10% is, right? So that you can have that equilibrium. But equilibrium requires constant juggle. I think we are at a space where our balance is pretty in balance, but that means that there's still two weights, work, the business, and our family together time, and in being intentional in that. All that to say, it's really about A, acquiring talent in the form of people to work in the company that understand core values, understand what needs to be done, have the core competencies to execute on that, and then trusting them to do it with the understanding that they're not always going to get it right. And that's okay, as long as they don't continue to repeat the same mistakes. But releasing the control around that is really hard, especially when the stakes are so high. So that can be hard, right, to actually trust people to do their jobs. But codifying your systems, making information available and accessible outside of your brain is the only way to do that, or else you keep yourself in a jail where only you know how to do everything. And everybody looks to you to solve the problems. And there's no company that grows that way. As we are thinking about who we are in this next chapter, we are also trying to create an infrastructure and foundation that other people can be a part of it, and it can be a great place to work, but they can also do the work. Just on the topic of rest, I was listening to a podcast the other day that said 90% of people don't love themselves. That concept of self-care is really hard, because if you don't love yourself, why would you care for yourself? And that's just the reality. Being in a discipline and in a practice of caring for yourself is super paramount to being able to raise other people, because then you are transferring messages of what self-sabotage, self-destruction looks like. Having moments of rest absolutely rehabilitate your mind to just think in different ways. If you're grinding all the time, you're always in survival. And I think there's value to that energy to a degree. We don't give up. We're gonna get through this with consistent, focused action. And some people might perceive that as a grind, but it's more like, no, we're just persistent. We know where we wanna be, we're on the same page about it, and we're going there. At the same time, when you're holding all of the information, it can be undue pressure on you that you're not able to release yourself to go and sit and do absolutely nothing. And the doing nothing is what's gonna give you the energy to come back with some new ideas. So work-life balance to me is the ability to have that moment of respite to recharge, even in the course of a day. There are pockets of that respite that can happen in the middle of a day as entrepreneurs. And I think the work-life balance is making sure that you have enough of that to recharge and that you're not constantly in survival.
And do you think honing all of these qualities and practices now will help you get to where you want to be as entrepreneurs and as people in the future?
This is what we're trying to figure out. Growth without systems is a disaster. Growth without systems is chaos and a lot of undue stress that I'm not interested in, and I don't think Nick is interested in either. The faster we can operationalize our operation, that it's not contingent on just what we know, the faster we can see what is the capacity for growth. And in that growth, is it with other people's money or is it just our money? Because that also introduces different pressures as well. I mean, it's an interesting time.
I have one last question for the two of you. What is one thing that you would tell your younger selves now as co-founders, having lived the lives that you have from moving from multiple industries?
Consistent action is the currency. That's it. Don't beat yourself up about not getting something right. You just keep showing up to it and you keep bringing your best in that every forward action, and you will move leaps, bounce farther than you could have imagined. Our business is a representation of that.
Everything's going to work out. Everything, every opportunity lost is an opportunity that's found. The anxiety from any that I've had my whole life about going from A to B, I've come to realization that we lose this, we get something else. So don't fret too much.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been so wonderful to chat to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for visiting us.
Thank you very much.
And that's the end of today's episode. Thank you so much to Petrushka and Nick again for sharing their insight on Urban Tales. Join me next week when I will be talking to Zoya Garg, founder of By Zoya, a handmade fashion company located in New York. However, this is not Zoya's only role. On top of being a local designer, she is also a micro-influencer and a Fordham University undergraduate student. At just 19 years old, Zoya started selling her designs during the pandemic and has grown as a creative and a brand since then. She recognizes New York as an integral part of her journey. Next week, Zoya and I will discuss the impact of her move from Seattle, her hometown, to New York at just 18. How she manages her business, school, and her creative dreams, and the ups and downs of using social media as a tool for both personal and professional promotion. If you're looking for more from Urban Tales, you can find new episodes every Tuesday from 2 p.m. or catch up on any missed content wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.